start you there, the Torah Way, Northwest London. Tuesday, 21st of Adar Rishon, 22nd of February, Rabbi Doniel Roe Shlita, Megillas Esther, Part 2. This week's Torah Way has been sponsored by family Shimon Boden. On the first Yahrzeit of his late mother, Mrs. Ellen Boden, Morris Achana Bas Shmuel HaKohen, whose Yahrzeit will be on Friday.
So actually we did the first two prokim, at least we covered, as we said, we did, but we looked at some of the biggest elements that come out of them. We're now entering the third parak, which begins Achar Dvarim Ha'ele. And the Medrash immediately jumps in and says, what's this Achar HaDvarim Ha'ele? We know, as we said last time, that in the Mishnah in Daf Yotes, there is a Machlokes, Daf Yotes and Megillah, there is a Machlokes over exactly what is the chiyuv to hear the Megillah. And we had, as we went through last time, there's three shittas in the Mishnah, four altogether. And it's Rav Yehuda, I believe, who says that Rav Yossi is Mechad Var Me'ela. Rav Yossi holds this is really the chiyuv, the obligation of Megillah begins in the third chapter, from after these things. Why? Because there's two drashas in the Gemara, it's called Tokef, because the full power, or the full, is the story of Haman. We should look at the Megillah in context. Last time we analyzed in terms of the context of Ahasuerus, or the context of Mordechai, in the context of Haman. And also, the Gemara has a separate drasha, Maro al Kocha Magia Lehem, right towards the end of the Megillah, when it defines what the point of the Megillah and the Purim is. It uses enigmatic pasuk, where it says, Maro al Kocha Magia Lehem. What did they see on that, and what became of them? Which is a pasuk without any clear references. And the Gemara says, basically, it opens up to many different possibilities, including what did Haman see when he wanted to make his gzeirah, what became of him. So the issue of the third chapter, Achar HaDvarim Ha'ele, it's that introduction after these things. We can only introduce the story of Haman once we've had these things. And what do we mean by Dvarim Ha'ele, all these things? So here we have the Gemara in Daf Yud Gimel, that speaks about where Rava says this is the classical Hikdim Refu Lamako. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has already introduced the cure before the Mako, which means the entire first two chapters is setting everything up, that the Dvarim Ha'ele, these things that will allow us to now have the entry of Haman. And if we think for a moment even, what are these things that have been done till now? So all the maneuvers that have been done to prepare the refuah, to prepare the cure, we've had first of all getting rid of Vashti and introducing this mysterious queen is going to be Esther, who is Esther. We've had the fact that even the antagonist himself is called Memuchan, which means he's Memuchan Apronius. He himself is set up. His very name means everything he does is to set up his own downfall. We've had the fact that everything he's done, he's created this bizarre ruling of Ahasuerus that means people won't take Ahasuerus' letters seriously anymore. He's turned Ahasuerus from an already worried individual into a completely paranoid individual, and he's introduced this fearful character, Esther, who Ahasuerus is in extreme paranoia about who she is, which will later on become a paranoia. The minute Esther invites Haman as well, he'll start becoming paranoid against Haman, which will also play its role. And of course, the other Dvarim Ha'ele we've had is Mordechai himself being put into position, that everything's been written in the Sefer Divrei Yomim. So everything is now set up for Klal Yisrael, that no matter what Haman will do now, it will only engineer his own downfall. That's Achar Dvarim Ha'ele. Then we have the Gidla Melech Hashreshes, Haman Ben Amadosa, Agogi. And of course, the very fact that Megillah never refers to Haman as an Amaleki, refers to him as Agogi, obviously draws us straight back to the story of Agag, who Shaul was meant to kill and didn't kill. And we'll see this a few times. The Megillah has certain ramazim. It's a few episodes the Megillah will constantly refer back to along the way. And we've already seen one last time. We saw, in fact, more than one. One of the episodes it refers back to regularly, with obvious reason, is the fact that Shaul failed to kill Agag, leaving alive what will become Haman. And that's expressed just in the very fact that we call him Ha'agogi, the very fact that we call Mordechai ben Yair ben Shimi ben Kish. We emphasize that he's from Shaul HaMelech, right, father of Kish, son of Kish. So we emphasize that Mordechai is from the lineage of Shaul HaMelech. Haman is from the lineage of Agag. And we've already seen as well And that was because Shaul failed to kill Agag that led to the whole story happening. And we already saw last time, even the line that Shmuel Hanav used to depose Shaul when he failed to kill Agag is exactly the same line that Haman used to reimpose Shaul's great-granddaughter back to the Malchus. That's what we saw last time. Okay, so once again, it's another Chad Varim Ha'eda. Haman ben Adasa Agag, it's one of these things that's clearly been set up. Everything is clearly moving into position. Okay, then there seems to have been stages of Haman's elevation. There's, first of all, Gidla Melech Haman Vayinaseu, Vayosem Eskisei Malach Kolosorim, and so on. And we get, of course, the episode which stimulates the entire story, which is that Mordechai refuses to bow down to Haman. And what the Megillah says like this, is Chaito HaMelech, Mordechai lo yichrav lo yishtachav, Mordechai won't bow down. And we even saw earlier when Mordechai was introduced, is Ish Yehudi Hayah B'Shoshana B'Yerushalayim, Mordechai ben Yoav ben Shimi ben Kish, Ish Yimini. Right, we had this seeming contradiction in one pasuk. Is he from Yehuda or is he from Binyamin? And we have three different answers in the Gemara. The third of which is that he's from Binyamin, but he's Yehudi because whenever in Tanakh it used the word Yehudi, it means he's Kaifa Bavodzari. He will refuse to bow down to Avodzah. Hanani and Mishal Avodzari are called Yehudim. Right? Whenever we use the word Yehudi, it's somebody who will not succumb to Avodzari. So that's what he is. And then comes the Pasuk. And the Abdi HaMelech say, why aren't you? By he, Ba'amram is the written Ka'amram is how it's like, Elov Yom Yom Veloy Shama Aleyem. It's when they said it day and day. In other words, the Avodim were constantly pushing Mordechai. Why are you not doing it? Why are you not doing it? Why are you not doing it? Veloy Shama Aleyem, he won't listen to them. Which is another classical reference posuk in the Megillah. And this refers us back to another episode, almost identical, which is right, this is referring to Ashes Potiphar, who is constantly trying to pressure Yosef, and he refuses. But it's almost word for word the same thing, and that's the Medrash picks up on this, and says the Megillah is again clearly referring us back to the same story. This is clearly the same thing happening, meaning in both scenarios there is an immense pressure, an immense temptation being placed on Yosef or on Mordechai. Now, why would we be linking Mordechai and Yosef? And the truth is we see many, many other examples of links. The Medrash brings a whole bunch of links between Yosef and Mordechai. Right? What does Achashverosh do? What does Paro do once he decides to appoint Yosef? So we have all the different things he does. It says over the Vayasa Paro is Tavato Ma'al Yada Vitena Oisal Yosef, right? Paro, once he elevates Yosef, takes off his ring, gives it to Yosef. That's what Achashverosh will do with Mordechai. Well, I'll do it with Haman as well. Later on, I'll do it with Mordechai. Right, we're interested in Yosef and Mordechai. We'll get to Hatzaras and the Haman, that's coming soon. But before then, to Mordechai, right? He's Malbishim, he's Markivim, he rides him around. All the things that happened to Yosef happened to Mordechai. So, and all b'schus that Yosef refused to give into the temptation, and all that will happen to Mordechai is b'schus the fact that he doesn't give into temptation. So there's a clear, very strong link in many different Ramazim to this, and obviously, at its core is the following issue, and we're going to see this more and more develop, is that Yosef is the antidote to Esav, right? The base Yaakov is Yosef is like okay, is the Lahava, is the spark that allows the base Yaakov to burn down the threat of Esav, and that's why Rashi brings at the end of Parashas Vayetze that once Yosef is born, now he can go back and face Esav, and obviously Esav is Haman, is Amalek, is Agag, is Haman, and that's what's going to be. So it's always the Bnei Rachel, as I pointed out last time, always the Bnei Rachel who will be leading the battle against Esav and the battle against Amalek. We saw Yeshua has to fight Amalek from Ephraim, from Yosef, from Rachel. Right? We saw that it's Shaul has to do it from Binyamin. Right? We see that it's Mordechai and Esther have to do it. And that is something that we already discussed a little bit last time. So this Remez here linking us right back to that story of Yosef, who refuses to be seduced in the middle of a difficult goddess, effectively, middle of an exile, and as a result of which is elevated to Gedula, is exactly what's happening over here. And Mordechai is under exactly the same pressure. The Yom Yom, day in, day out. Well, I shom aleim, he won't listen. Okay, then it's my Gidula, and like in both stories, we then go through what appears to be a crisis before we get to the Geula. Now, Haman is fuming at this. This lashon vayivez be'enav, as the Medrash points out, this is exactly what Esav always does. Right? Anything that's valuable to Yisrael, Esav, we use the lashon of vayivez for. So again, we're referring back to the story of Esav and Yaakov, back to this season of Yosef. This is all what's being set up over here in the Megillah. Now, as it happens, the next thing that Haman, once he decides he's going to kill Klal Yisrael, is Hippopor, who are Goyro. And by the way, of course, this is one of the great mysteries of Purim. Is what's that? Correct. So the Medrash Rab already points out, but yes, right. Then he does the Hippopor Agoyrol, and we know later on we're going to call Purim Purim al Shem Apur, and ostensibly it's one of the most mysterious named Moedim in the whole of the most mysteriously named one. In that it's the only time we have a name for a day in the calendar where if you were explaining the story to somebody who didn't know anything about it and you spent a whole minute explaining it or 2 minutes, you probably wouldn't use the word that is the title, except for the fact that we're stuck with the title. Had it not been called Purim, had it not been called, let's say, Yom Kippur, you were describing what happened on Yom Kippur in the Torah, we got Kapora. That was the very first Yom Kippur. So it's obviously, and we get every year Kapora. That's an obvious thing to call it. Rosh Hashanah is a very obvious title. Shavuos, the end of counting the Shavuos, it's obvious. Pesach, these are all obvious titles. Right? Chanukah, right? That we rededicated the Beis Hamikdash. So in any scenario, if you were talking to somebody who knew nothing about Torah mitzvahs, and you explain to them what goes on, you would happen to use, obviously, the title just in your description. If you were talking to somebody about Purim, and it wasn't particularly called Purim, you only had like 10 minutes to talk about it, you probably would never mention the Purim. It doesn't obviously link to anything. It's not obviously essential to the story. The story is we're in serious trouble. We have an Amaleki and Agagi who wants to kill us all. We have this incredible set of apparent coincidences where the queen happens to be Jewish and this, and she reveals it at the key time and everything. And the whole story like that, we got saved and Klal Yisrael saved, and amazing story. The fact that Haman happened to choose the date with some random device instead of intentionally, that makes any difference to the story? So it must be that the whole point is that is the story. Because the essence of Amalek is a shakar chavadah. The essence of Amalek is, and this is what Haman was expressing, the most significant moment in Klal Yisrael's history will be decided in the most insignificant way possible. Because the entire shkof of all of life is that nothing is significant. Everything is random. Everything is meaningless. Everything is poor. Hippopor goyrol. Everything is a goyrol. There is no meaning to anything. Of course, as we'll see all the way through the story, the people who believe life is meaningless always have worked out a pattern. They've got to, right? They always got to make sense of things. And we'll see that Haman's always, so he lays poor land. First it goes all wrong, because he does it day by day. He sits there on Nisan, and he throws the poor, and the next date it comes out is going to be Yud Gimel. That has to be at least a month away. So that's the first way. Then he does month by month. It comes out in the first month. But now he's happy because Moshe Rabbeinu. What's Moshe Rabbeinu got to do with anything? Or Mises Avraham Avinu? Yeah, there would be a Yahrzeit somewhere. You know, you got to just look down the Tachanun list. So somebody, they've always had one. So what's the big issue of Moshe Rabbeinu? Except that we realize the Gemara, when it tells us that estimatory minayim, you know, as an echaster ester ponai, it the Gemara kind of modcha minatayim, mar dror, mar dachia, homo minatayim, homo minatayim, vizicha levilti, homo minachalta, moshe minatayim minayim. Amazing, so moshe minatayim minayim, moshe daltos. But the point is that the Gemara clearly links the fourth, and Moshe Rabbeinu is a part of the Purim story too. How? So on a relatively simple level, because Misas Moshe Rabbeinu, the death of Moshe Rabbeinu came because you didn't speak to the seller, you hit the seller. You know, big difference in this. The answer is, well, here this is something Ramosh Shapira, as it's I'll say, when he's giving a shir on Rav Yitzchak Isaac Chava's pirish of the Artur, of the Malas Artur. And Rav Yitzchak Isaac Chava in the Artur says that, I don't know if he says how much it was him, and how much is more, I think it's a lot with more of Moshe bringing out. But he says that Dabar al-Sala would have shown, as Rashi brings the Kal V'Chomer, would have shown that everything in the world, even that which appears to obstruct Hashem, because the water is a Maimed HaTorah, and the rock that always blocks it, there's always a rock blocking the water coming out. Like Yaakov's got to deal with a rock blocking the water. Moshe Rabbeinu's got to deal with a rock blocking the water. Yeah, Rabbi Akiva's got to deal with the water getting through the rock. But even the rock that blocks, even the thing that blocks the revelation of Hashem, is really just the Dvar Hashem. If you speak and the rock would do Hashem's will, you would show that really everything in the world is just the Dvar Hashem. Vayoyime Elokim Yihiyar. La'olam Hashem Tvarcho Nitzav Hashemayim. The whole world is Hashem's words. If you use the right words, the everything does rotzon in Hashem. Even the things that look like they're blocking are really just there to reveal. When you hit the rock, you show that there's a battle. There's a battle between revealing Hashem and concealing Hashem. And it happens to be that in this battle we won. That Moshe Rabbeinu, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was stronger than evil, so he wins. But Be'etzam, there's a battle. And what Moshe Rabbeinu ends up showing without intending it, and maybe that's what he's setting up because he feels Klal Yisrael's on a too low a level to see anything else, is there's a constant milchama, there's a constant battle between that which is revealing Hashem and that which is concealing Hashem. And the minute Moshe Rabbeinu shows that, he gives an opening for the world of Amalek to step in and say, okay, so now let's battle. So Mises Moshe Rabbeinu turns out to be a very significant part of the Purim story. It's that which allows a world in which there's a struggle and a fight, and it's not so clear, and we'll see how Haman's going to exploit that. But of course, what he didn't realize is Leidas Moshe Rabbeinu. What is Leidas? Not just that it's Moshe Rabbeinu who all of his Torah in the end will be Niskala anyway, but much more than that. Moshe Rabbeinu's very birth was created by something trying to destroy Klal Yisrael. Leidas Moshe Rabbeinu is the first Purim story. The birth of Moshe Rabbeinu is you've got Paro doing everything he can to destroy Yisrael. He's got two midwives who he's decided are going to be the force to destroy Israel. He's using the Nile. He's got the whole he's got himself as the core of it. And every single one of those conspires to bring up the person who's going to destroy him and reveal Hashem. So in other words, the birth of Moshe Rabbeinu is the first Purim story. And this is, okay, so, but in the meantime, in the ideological perspective of Haman, his ideology of Purim, of Mikra and so on, is what now leads him into the temple to destroy. So then the Gemara says, then he has to go and persuade Achashverosh, and the Gemara says there was nobody in New Lishna. Rava says that there was nobody in New Lishna Bisha, nobody could speak Lashon Hara like more than Haman. What does he say? Yeshnai Am Echad. Right, he goes into Paro, into Achashverosh. So Achashverosh says to him, so we're getting all Purim here, right? Achashverosh says to him, the problem is that anyone who tries to destroy Israel, look what happens to Paro, terrible things happen to them. Right? Ah, but they are Yeshno, they Yeshenim in Amitzis. Again, you have to always understand something very, very important here. Two things. One is Amikriyatim de Peshutta. Right? The overt conversation between, as we'll see, has to still be Kipshutta. But Yeshno, Yeshenim in Amitzis, they're asleep in the Amitzis. There's a battle. There's a battle between good and bad. And whenever Klal Yisrael fail, there's a chance for bad to get its power. This, of course, goes all the way back to Esav. Again, Esav gets the bracha that whenever Yisrael is loose, they can fight. Yeshnein, and he says Achashverosh, Ikarabonon. But look, you got still some very choshev talmid echomim. You got the yeshivas, and you got some, you know, the am echod. Hakadosh Baruch Hu is not going to save them because Ikarabonon, the am echod. The arevim zelazer, they got to look out for each other. Where are they? You know. And we start just thinking, then he goes on. We look at that Gemara and you think, what does the Gemara say? It's turning Haman into a Ma'amin. Haman's sounding not like a Ma'amin, he's sounding like a Bal Musa. You know, if you're Yeshenim in a mitzvah, look at what can go on with you. You don't have a Ravus. This is like a very, very, this is not a Amalek Gematria Sophic. Elamai. So first of all, Amikrates and Dibshut. That's first. Second, we'll remember they were speaking in Persian, not Lashon HaKodesh. The drasha probably doesn't work in Persian. So what's happening is that the Megillah writes deliberately the translation of what they're doing, Ruach HaKodesh, so that it says two things. What was overtly said and what was really going on behind the scenes. What's overtly said is Yeshna Am Echad, there's one nation, it's not Shoivet, and even there, these always behave differently, you know, classical anti-Semitism stuff. But the subtext, the subconscious layer, is that Haman and Molech feels the power to act because at the Shoirish, at the root of who they are, is a fundamental doubt. Not necessarily Metzias Hashem. Consciously, they may doubt there's a creative universe, but that's not what's really going on. What they doubt, what they are subconsciously driven by, is they do not believe there can be human beings in this world who can stay connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So they look, they see Sheinim and Amitzis. They're failing, and they spot that. And every time they feel that failure, they feel the failure of Yisrael to live up to what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants, they feel vindicated. They feel this sense of, you see, humans cannot really be godly people. This we see all the way back in Parshat Bashalach when they attack Yisrael in the first place. That Masa Meriva, they call it. Why? Because they say, Yesh Hashem bekirbeinu imayim. Yisrael don't ask a Yesh Hashem imayim. A Yesh Hashem bekirbeinu. Does the Kadosh Baruch Hu really live within us? Or not? When that doubt enters, Vayavar Amalek, then Amalek comes. And of course, it's Moshe Rabbeinu himself who has to go and resolve that with his. Yeshua has to do the fighting. Moshe Rabbeinu Yadav Emunah, when his hands point to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when he shows Klal Yisrael that our Maisim are connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that our Maisim make a difference in the world, then V'yechash Yeshua is the Amalek. Then Amalek is gone. When he feels the weight of Klal Yisrael's struggle of maybe our actions mean nothing at all, then Amalek is very powerful. So Moshe Rabbeinu is always the subtext of the Melacham against Amalek. And Moshe Rabbeinu's death, Haman interprets as the failure of Klal Yisrael. He interprets it as the fact that you're stuck in this battle now between good and evil, and sometimes when good goes down, evil can rise up. And he doesn't understand that ultimately, Moshe Rabbeinu's leader, ultimately, everything about Moshe Rabbeinu, what Moshe Rabbeinu brings into the world is that's not true. What Moshe Rabbeinu brings into the world is ultimately Yadav Emunah. Ultimately, the minute we switch the right thing on, it's gone. Amalek is gone. In the end, the Kadosh Baruch Hu, the scala will be revealed no matter what. But this is it. So the Lishna Bisha reveals this deep, so we have two deep Ashkafic points of Amalek. One, Mikra, Purim, everything is meaningless. Two, at its core, it could be there's something up there, but not down here. Down here, at its fundamental core, is a deep Sophic that a human being is anything more than a robotically programmed animal. That's essentially all we are. The Shaychus to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, short term you can have blips and inspiration, long term it can't happen. And when that Sophic sets in, that by the way is the deep inner feelings we can have when we can relate to the inner struggle, the root of all that we do this rah in the end comes from something inside us that says we are meaningless. We are the Purim. We are the worthless. We're just this scattered little, who am I? What difference do I make? Kadosh Baruch Hu couldn't love me. That's the Kisa point of Amalek into this. Okay, let's just move a little bit further forward just because we don't have that many weeks in Purim, so we have to see some of the kuddas over here. That, okay, so the Gezerah goes out. Vayasa Melech Tabatoi, right, and unbelievably, just points in note, Vayasa Melech Tabatoi, when the king gives over the ring, remember the remez of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is used the Lashon HaMelech, not Melech HaKashverish. It doesn't say Melech HaKashverish gave the ring. HaMelech. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself is now handing the reins of history to pure evil to see what will happen in the world. Right, the HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself is elevated. Is driving this. The Gemara tells us that the Hasaras HaTabas, that handing over the ring, did more than 48 Nevi'im and 7 Nevi'os, everything else, that moment, the traumatic moment. And by the way, it's very easy because we're so used to the end of the Megillah to not notice how traumatic its center point is. The Lashonas, Mordechai, all the Pasuk in the beginning, Chol Medina, Medina, Makoy Mashiach, Devar Melech Vadosu Megeh, Eivol God Layhudim, Tzoyim, Upechi, Mispeid, Sack, they're doing a spadim already. They're like lining each other up and saying, well, this one today and ask for this. This is tragic because there's no solution. It's an incredible moment where there's a problem without a solution. There's nowhere to run. There's nowhere to go. The gezeira is everywhere. There's no way to defend themselves. The Nevi'im are telling them that there's no Nissim going to happen. They can't even get through a tefillah to Kodesh Baruch Hu. They don't know that Esther's Jewish. If she does, she can't get through. The whole thing is hopeless. It's so tragic. And then what does Mordechai do? Vayizak za'aka gedoyla umara. Mordechai goes out and has that cry, that incredible, bitter, deep cry that is God is great and it's mara, it's bitter, which echoes exactly what Esau did. Za'aka gedoyla umara admoid. The same cry, the same story. He understands. Because, you see, the Purim story is, of course, the replay, exactly the replay of Mordechai and Esther, which is of Esav and Yaakov, which is exactly the replay of the story of Gan Eden. Just like in Gan Eden, right, the story ends with Adam's the eyes open after the chait. So the beginning, the story, the battle of the brachos begins with Yitzhak's eyes that close. The story in Gan Eden is which future you have, the one that brings bracha to the world of Klala, and the story with Yaakov and Esau is who's going to get the bracha, the one that brings bracha to the world, or the one that brings Klala. The story of, even the Yaakov, Rei Reach B'ni Kerech HaSad HaShabeh HaShem. Yitzhak says, this smells like Gan Eden. Yaakov walks in wearing the clothes of Adam HaRishon. Just like the Isha got it wrong in the first story, she's Masakin, Rivka is Masakin it in the second story. And say the bracha that they're fighting over, in Parashas Toldos is exactly the antidote to the klala of the Vitei Lecha Elokim Etal Shemayim Shemayim Eretz. It's exactly the undoing of Kotz Daragat Hatzmiach. All the klala that comes in Gan Eden is there as a Bechatech Alechem, right? And then the whole story is again replayed throughout the Megillah, where the great great grandson of Esav is going to. And in fact, that's what the Medrash says. Haman says to Mordechai, look, your great great grandfather Yaakov bowed to my great great grandfather Esav. So Yaakov says to him, that's true, but my great-grandfather, Binyamin, wasn't born yet. We don't bow down to you. The whole story is the replay. Here we're going to have, just like in Gan Eden, takes me the Chatz of Mizangina Samarach, in the garden of the king. It's going to be a Eitz Gavoya Chamishim Amo, back to the Eitz Adas, and now the question is, who goes back onto it? Is it Haman? Haman mena Torah mena Hamina Eitz Hashatzi V'sicha Levilti Haman mena, the forbidden fruit, which is Haman, can we get him back on the Eitz? Undo the Chet? This is the story going all the way through. So at every point we have to constantly be replaying this episode. I'll just finish with this Nakuda over here, because we're really out of time. But jumping into the dialogue between Esther and Mordechai. Just still have time? We're out of time.
Yeah.
So one of the very important bits, it's actually amazing, when Esther for the first time in the Megillah starts to now really assert herself, because till now, everything, she's the Mama Mordechai Esther Oysa, she hasn't done anything, right, in Esther Magedas. Now she becomes assertive, which is in the Kudot Tznias. Tznias is not that something doesn't exist, it's the right place for it to be, and there's a wrong place for it to be. And there's a dignity in revealing what needs to be revealed in the right place and not in the wrong place. And here Esther begins to start to move forward. And she does so strongly. She rebukes Mordechai so strongly. You know, every idiot in every kid in kindergarten learns Persian constitutional law. You can't cross over the king. It says when you get the Mordechai, am I right? That it gets told. The Sach won't actually go. So the Gemara directly give the rebuke back. Well, Mordechai then says, if you think about it, Mordechai first said, go with the plan. Lech, bochus, chanen, cry, beg, do all this stuff. You've got to do it. Esther says it's a crazy idea. Mordechai doesn't come back with a plan the second time. He basically says, you're right. Sorry, that was a crazy idea. But you've got to do something. If you stay silent now, somehow history will arc towards some kind of salvation of Klal Yisrael. But you and your ancestral home will be obliterated. First of all, interesting lashon. Who knows? I don't know. Right, me is always some remes by the Tekon Shprachu, but me, who knows? In other words, Mordechai is now saying the following, and we will see Be'ez Hashem how this plays out, how not having a clear plan is actually one of the ikorim of how you deal with a world in the against the Moloch. But one of the main points he's saying is, I don't know what you got to do, Esther. That's the truth. I don't have it figured out. I know one thing. If you, right, Atu Vesavich, you and your ancestral home means Shaul HaMelech. Agag, if you can't feel the fact that God's promise put you in, you've got to do something. I don't know what. It might fail. You might walk across and get killed at the gates. Could happen. But history, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has put you here to do something. You've got to work it. She says, you're right. If that's the case, then Lech Kenais Kol HaYehudim. Then let's get the whole of Klal Yisrael into this movement. If I've become the conduit, then I need the whole of Klal Yisrael behind me. If this is the moment the history has been waiting for, then I can't do this as me. As me, voila, as the whole of Klal Yisrael rests in me. So the beginning of the answer to everything Amalek is timing on what's an individual is every individual is a conduit for the whole of Klal Yisrael. Every individual in every situation. And this is why Moshe Rabbeinu never really, Moshe Rabbeinu is always there. Moshe Rabbeinu's Leda is always with us all the time. Because there's always a Leich Kenos Kol HaYehudim. Within every single one of us, Yishenim Min HaMitzvos or not, is the Am Echad. We can be Foyz and Foyred, but there's a Knesas Kol HaYehudim in that level. We'll stop over there for us. Thank you.